Glendalough is the name of the place. Glendalough.
Yeah.
Now there's a place now. Glen is a glen and Dalloch. The Loch Dan and Loch something. There are two lakes up there.
Yeah.
And and that's still like Clonmacnoise. I don't better than Clonmacnoise actually. If you go out there, it's a lovely people go out there. So that is, and there you have a round tower out there as well. So that's.
But you were telling me that you know that when people started to move in, it every place changed so drastically.
This would have been taken, what like most places outside towns in Ireland, you had Bohans, you had ordinary. Well, I'd say if you go back far enough, you know, little mud cabins, thatched roofs, and all that kind of stuff in it. And you'd have maybe 10 kids knocking around up to the time of the famine in 1847, you know. And that happened. I remember kids going to school with no shoes. Well, it was, you know, the hygiene of the place, where they had these small skillet pots and all that kind of thing. And you had a losset for putting flour in. You have to see a losset.
What is a losset now?
A losset is a kind of, it's a little board, it's so simple, really. You had a flat board and you had sides on it, four sides, and they'd be up about that, and you put flour into it and you mixed it up.
Oh,
and
yes,
you made cakes, lossets.
Yeah.
And then you had gridirons, and you know.
So it was a utensil, or indeed, for mixing flour and.
No, it was for holding and the facility.
Yeah,
so the flour would move all over the house.
A losset, yeah.
A losset, really, just.
Mm.
Yeah. But,
you do.
1989. One man is 98, the other was 89. And I got a tremendous amount of information. Because they are very clear, though, not like me. Yeah, mats and stuff mixed up in your head. You know, the old brain has to go someplace. But they were very clear. And they say, oh, that was in the 16, now 19, so and so. You know, you said, how the hell would he, man?
Yeah.
See, we're pushing the mind a bit. But anyway, they said, this house, they used to boil the porridge and piss in the same pot. How cruel the thing was, you know. But you get that Langland in any of those ancient kind of places back in.
Life was primitive, wasn't it? Very primitive.
Well, I'm amazed. When you see, you had all these Roman soldiers, and they came through England as well. And archaeologists are showing up now, and they had gullets, and they had their own kind of natural setup. That was fine that time away back, you're talking a few thousand years now. And then somebody asked, how did they wipe their backsides?
Mm.
With sponge, not toilet paper, sponge. How practical the whole thing had become, you know, how you'd serve a whole lot of, and they had Hadrian's Wall, you know, the whole idea came up through England, up, divided the North savages, the Celts and the lads, including ourselves, they had soldiers at various positions with lights and they had signals, all this kind of stuff. Very well developed, you know. But they had, that was the style of the time.
Yeah, but down
through the middle. Somebody got up in the middle of the night now.
Yeah.
So, you know, they had to get up in the middle of the night. You could imagine, I often don't know, in a country place, way back, you know. And what facilities had they, you know, snowy night or something, you know?
But time stood still for so long, right up to your childhood, back in Galway, I'm sure you remember.
I remember things,
you know,
I wouldn't, houses. I know things about places, and I wouldn't record them, because I've actually, a place called Mulock's now down beyond Ballycumber. And they were uppity people. They gave me all their all their stuff, actually. And they,
when you say stuff,
they gave me all their documents about how the house and
yeah.
and Moniz of Doon gave me theirs. When Moniz of Doon, the family back at the time of Cormac Cass, and well, it's a huge amount of history on Britain, you know.
So I mean that leads me on to the next question, you know, that because people lived like that for so long, that, you know,
yeah, they went to America or they died of hunger or
yeah
died normally,
and then that's why memories or oral history is so good, isn't it? You know,
but should the modern kids, I used to do a lot of this with kids, and I used to do a lot of kind of, you know, developing their kind of their literary kind of thing, you know, and to write about, now this goes way back, of course, it is important to keep memories and experiences together. And somebody said to me when I started writing a book, we are collecting material for it. I wasn't in a hurry, of course, to say, that's not history. And I said, it mightn't be, but it's going to be history. You see, and that's important that we keep the historical thing. My grandfather now, of course, I just remember him as I was a small boy, I just remember him. And he had a big white front, you know, this kind of collar and your buttons in the back. I can remember that, a big man. That's all. But my eldest brother, they're all dead now. I'm the last of the boys now.
Mm.
And
but in your grandfather, was he an entrepreneur? You said that he gave 10 shops to 10 of his children. He must have been. He must have made a lot of money. Yes.
He was seven. He was 7 years old when, in actual fact, the famine's in 1848, 1847.
Yeah.
He died in 1933. And you'd all this, you'd have it in the two. Now, he had two first cousins, two parish priests, and they were all, you know, the usual kind of. And they used to always say, oh, that's Mick Devine's church. He built it. He didn't build it, but he gave a fair amount of money to it. But they used to say he built it. You know, that he paid for the building. No, he wouldn't. But the parish priest, I know this now for a fact, you know. And I actually remember the parish priest of that father. There was Father Larkin and Father Porter. Now, they were two first cousins of his. And fine men. They were all 6-footers, you know. But the grandfather, he had a fair amount of land, you know. And he always had cattle and sheep. One of the things... The stories that went, that 10 ewes that he had actually got fluke, you know, you got this kind of thing, you know that. And he went and he bought 10 ewes, and each of them had 3 lambs. He always tells that story. Each of them had 3 lambs.
He knew, exactly, yes, imagine.
The following year, I think.
Yeah. And what about if he lived through the famine? If he was born,
he lived famine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, did he talk about that? Did he talk about any part of his life done along the early part?
He wouldn't talk to me. I only picking up the crumbs.
Yeah.
But he was a very interesting man. He and a few more actually were very interested in mathematics, and they were good mathematics. They weren't foolish or anything like that. And he'd talk about meeting at fairs, and I had various memories. Now, he was a member of the Land League in that area in East Galway, but he was a very quiet man. He was a total, and my mother, God rest her, she was saying that he was the nicest man she ever met. That's my grandfather now. He's a lovely man. I believe that, you know, he was a quiet man.
Was he active during the...
Pardon? No.
Was he active in the campaign?
He was active in kind of organisation.
Was he?
He was in the organisation, but he wasn't a belligerent man.
Was the house used as a safe house or...?
No. Not as far as I know. I don't think so, no.
Yeah. Or for meetings?
Well, now, possibly. There were 3 around that area. There's Woodford, Loch Ray, there would be Gort, right around that area of the three. And they were taken up, actually, and they were brought across the River Corrib in a boat. And they were nearly wrecked at the place. The waves got over them. They were very lucky to get away. But they were put into Galway jail.
Were they captured?
They were taken in by the owners.
Including your grandfather?
Including my grandfather. And they were
put in. What were they doing, do you think? They were up to something,
obviously.
Well,
they had the name of organising people. To the quiet place, but the people think that people went out at hatches every night. They didn't really. They were people, day boys and all these that you talk about. They'd be like...
like the white boys, not the white boys.
Grandfather now wouldn't be belong to that kind of, or the IRA now, where you go to shoot people, you know.
Yeah, but the Fenian movement was a different, I suppose
it was... If you organize, he was a very pragmatic man, and he didn't believe, he was a pacifist, but he still believed, he had land. There's no reason why he should be bothered. Do you get me?
Yeah.
But he was in an area now belonged to a man called Lewis, and Lewis wasn't too good to the people around about. Now he would take up a cause, you know, and help it as much as he could. He was a very intelligent man, but they brought him in. They didn't get anything out of him or out of the other two either. But they brought them and they had him in, and he used to describe actually how they put them. Picking oakum, you know, all this kind of
business. This is inside Galway jail now.
Galway jail, the old jail in Galway.
Yeah.
And I used to pass that. I used to pass that up to the university every bloody day now while I was there. And the lock was in the lock was actually in the big door, and it's where the cathedral in Galway is now.
Yeah.
Do you know the cathedral?
I do indeed. It was built on the same site. But just to think of your grandfather in there, what was he doing again? When he was in there, you said that he was...
They used to pick oakum. Oakum was some kind of a hard, kind of fibrous thing that they had to pick up, you know, and then they had bones, and they used to... They were their treadmill. It was all punishment to these.
Yeah.
And somebody would stand on this and the wheel, that their own weight, and that thing you'd put the wheel going on to grind. And they were very funny. He had a great sense of humour. So they called him Tom Malone, and Tommy used to say... Come on, Mick, I'll stop that. And Mick said, you idiot, you're killing me up here.
This is what went on in the jail.
That went on in the jail, and then they'd be picking oakum so they could make, I suppose, a cord or something out of it, but I don't know what the hell. They were there for a week, I think.
As young lads, obviously, I'd say.
They would have been young.
Yeah. And the you know the land wars, there was a lot of boycotting and
there was
work like that going on.
There was. That would have happened up now in Woodford.
Yeah. But a lot of activity around Loughran and that area as well, wasn't there?
Where?
Loughray. Sorry, in Loughray, wasn't there a lot of activity?
Yeah, well, Loughray would have been the nearest town, you see. But Ballykill, that time, they had no church. It was only in our grandfather's time that they built the church, because they belonged to Abbey Denary. There's an Abbey Knockboy away, no more north. There was Abbey Denary. And Abbey Denary had one of the old, these fellows, poets, what do you call them? They had a poet's...
Oh, yes, a poet school, wasn't it? Or
Bardic school.
Yeah, Bardic school.
And they had to get in a car and thing and put a line their bellies and hay and all that, or straw, until they got some ideas. You know, this whole idea, that little bit of sunshine.
Yeah.
But they don't have it. But that was well known, it's well known. So you have Abbey. Now, Abbey was an abbey, of course, you know, and it's still called Abbey. I have friends that are still there. So we're like... I couldn't walk any place in Galway that I wouldn't be walking on the bones of some of my...
Your own ancestors or...
We don't know where they came from. I think they came down at O'Neill O'Donnell, the Battle of Kinsale, and forgot to go home, you know. But two of these actually went off to Texas, and I got a book on that now because Vivian was in college in Texas. That's our eldest fellow who's on the phone there now, and brought it home, and there was a patch... The names actually went with people. You had my father was Martin, and you had Pat and Mick and what the hell, James. Yeah, so many, and these went all over the place. They just, and any if you had
But
any doubt about them,
names follow in families, don't they?
they're
As
doing, and
well.
they're doing the very uppity families, we call them,
Yeah.
and you'd be up to your ears, say, what the hell, who's Henry is that? He could be, so you had five or six Henrys in different kind of, and that annoy your head, and you had these in Kings of England as well. And to get into this thing, if I was doing a bit of history, you said I'm trying to tell the story of this place and make kind of sense of it. But
But
then
the,
you,
your own people, the divines,
yeah,
yeah. Where did they originate? From the north, you were saying.
there were Odavian is the name. Dov is an ox, and Ian is the diminutive, and it's the little ox probably. And they were all like that. They were very well built.
Yeah,
Davin and
stocky.
Ian is around to me actually, because they were anything but Ian, they were fine. But I wouldn't like to meet one of them, a dark night shift.
Yeah.
But they weren't noted for anything, not as far as I can figure out. I never heard. I never. But he will tell you actually, he knew a huge amount of history. And had I been as wise after. That happened for other people too. Even at Ballycumber now, they had a lot of people with a lot of knowledge. The fellow there, Paddy Flanagan, he was a poet and a very, very learned man. And he used to come into our house every night nearly. And he knew all, his brothers fought in the wars, like the Frank, not the Franco-Prussian War, be back. He was talking about World War I and World War II. And
Did you know P. Nolan?
I knew him very well.
Yeah, another great man in Ballycumber.
Did you know him? You did.
Oh no, he was dead long before my time, but
I'll
I
tell you a funny one now. We were Fianna Fáil. We're still Fianna Fáil since 1930s, 1930 when Dev. That'll tell you kind of. But P. Nolan got in with the IRA kind of thing. And was probably living it. I don't remember. He was much older than I was, but he knew a lot of local history. But there was some of it that wasn't altogether correct, even under. Anyway, that's another story. But he indoctrinated a lot of young fellas, not a lot, but young fellas. He'd be talking, I'd be talking about Robert Emmet, Bowl Robert Emmet, who died with a smile, but.
Yeah.
And Robert Dem is connected with this place, of course, here too. I'll tell you that in a minute. But P actually was take Dev conscripted a lot of fellas during the last war. You know that.
Yeah.
I put them into the place down here,
Curry
the
camp.
Curry camp. And they were looking for P. Now, the day before, I was talking to P, and he was at a pit of potatoes, and he talking to me about Robert Emmet and all these. School didn't bother to me about it. Robert Emmet in the book, now that's all I bothered about. But I had home, and I often wondered, like, he was totally impregnated with this kind of thing. You just wonder what it's all about. But the sergeant, Sergeant Ford, I have his photograph in a book inside, and my father were talking at our door one day, and he said, Martin, I'm looking for P. Nolan. Oh, I didn't see him. P was standing behind my father at the door.
Well, I'll tell you about Pino. There was a man down in Ballycumber, Jim Kenny,
I knew him, yeah.
and he interviewed P. Nolan in the 1980s when he was alive and well. And that recording I have.
Well,
And listening back
he's
to him,
living
he
in
was.
Tullamore.
That's right. But he went down to record P. Nolan.
I know.
And it was such an interesting recording. He
Oh,
was
he's
such an
very,
interesting man.
well, very interesting, because he was a native, you see. We weren't natives, you see. So we wouldn't have
The local
the
lore as
not,
much.
not really in that, but they'd know what they had for their breakfast and who was
Well,
what.
yes. Yeah, but okay, now switching over to Robert Emmet, I'm very interested in Robert Emmet. What was his connection here in Clondalkin? Could you tell me?
Well, now it's what he, what should I call him? Lord Kilwarden was Arthur Wolfe before he got the. He was Chief Justice of Ireland, and he lives up there at the corner, not far way up on the golf place in Newlands, in the big house there. And he was a great friend of Finlay's, who own Corker Park. Now that's a big park here, and the county council have put millions into it, and it makes you go and see it. It's worth seeing. Now I have a book written on it actually, and I know all the people involved there, and I know the people actually who came there and who they were and what they were. Finlay's. Now Finlay's, the origin of that was Fionnlagh. Sorry,
Sorry.
was Fionnlagh. That was the Fair Warriors. They came from Scotland to Roscommon, and they were bankers actually, and they had banks, commercial banks in town. And the place, these are encumbered estates. They were owned by people who got them actually through paying for English soldiers to come over and tell you the usual thing, so that the absentee landlords lived in London or someplace else. I've stuff on them inside there, names. So you found all kind of Arabin was another, Arabin, and they actually owned Corker House, the old Corker House. That was built on, there was an old castle as well, it was built on by Finlay's and some other Latouche people, I think, they were the bank people as well. And but I can't get quite know, like everything else, it's, I thought it was built between 1702 and 1714. That was the Queen Anne period, and they called it Queen Anne House. It was a lovely house. It was demolished actually in the 1950s by a man who bought it, who had more, he had more money than wit. But I suppose they taxed them as they did in 1922. The government, and he began to knock the chimneys off and all that kind of stuff. And eventually he got a bulldozer and got it. It was a listed house, you see, but there's no use talking about it. But I know every inch of that house now. I have all the and the people who lived there well, Finlay's anyway bought it, and the Finlay's were tied up actually with in the military world as well as the banks. And they always, they were a clan actually in Scotland, like the Armstrongs, and I have books written on Armstrongs as well about that, the clan stuff on that. They were people actually. Now Ballycumber, that Ballycumber house now was an Armstrong house, and Shears Armstrong, who betrayed the brother Shears, and this brings us back now to Robert Emmet. He's peripheral to what I'm saying. I'm going up now to Arthur Wolfe, and he was tied up with Wolfe Tone. He was connected with Wolfe Tone, I'm bringing you into Corker now, Corker Park. The Finlays were great friends of his, and they were both wardens in John's Church, which is the oldest church in Clondalkin, and it's the newest church that was built on the old church that was here at the time of Markowa, yeah, or Markowa, you call him. But Kilwarden was the Chief Justice actually of the 1798 guys,
Rebellion, yes.
and it. Robert Emmet, of course, was tied up with that in his own way, the Emmets. But this was in his latter years of Robert Emmet, not Kilwarden. Kilwarden and John Findlay, who was head of the house up here, they were both wardens of John's Church. They were that. And the coach that, what am I called it, Lord Kilwarden was driving, used to drive around until it became too dangerous, because the people in town here were always aware of his about, and they would have got him. But it happened actually in September the 9th, 1803. He came out, came down the long oak, what do we call, approach to Cork House, met John Finlay and had a chat. And John said to him, don't go into town. He had his nephew and his niece and himself and the coachman. And he said, I'm not afraid, he said, but I don't see why I should, or why in actual fact I shouldn't. But something drove him into town. And he was Mount Brown in Old Kilmainham there. He was met a little bit in Thomas Street. And they said, who are you? And he went up, he said, I'm Lord Kilwarden. And they took him straight out. And the nephew actually, I believe, was a parson, he was a Church of Ireland man, that took him out, and they let the daughter out, right? And they all took diabolical pleasure out of seeing who would pike him to death. They had all their pikes and they stuck him to bits. And the nephew was killed, and there was a rest place for some watchman there, a big slab, and they put him up on that. And he always maintained, you know, that he was a man of justice, and everybody should get justice, despite the fact that he condemned by his, you know, deliberations and everything, that these fellows should be put to death, so many, and so others be let off, maybe. And he knew he was going to die, and he said, only justice can do justice to what these people have done. But he said, let nobody, by any other means, he said, destroy those people, he said, except by a court of law. And he died.
My goodness, yeah.
He was so meticulous about it. So he was really a great man, really, when you think about it. And of course, the insurgents didn't think that.
Yes.
So they brought him out anyway. And now, his daughter and carriage came back the way they went, came in to the side, Corker, where they left off, passed actually Corker House, went up the way they came in, and went off to the corner and back into the house. That's true. But there was a ghost story about that, that they were often, his coach was often heard actually flying up the. Now, there's another story about that.
Yes.
There's another story about that in 1916. Now, Edith Finlay was the last of the Finlays, because the lads were killed in the Boer War, and they were killed in War One and War Two, and so on. And she was left in control of the place, which didn't do very much in his favour. Though she was a wonderful woman. She died in 1973. Collie, who married her, Collie. The Collies came in with Cromwell, and they lived down in Cork. You know that. The Collie man who married she married a Collie man, and they were connected with the Dublin Castle crowd. And the Dublin Castle crowd actually knew, or they got a hint, that the rising was to take place in 1916. And they weren't terribly sure when it was going to take place, but they had the usual kind of hints, fellas all around, you know, for bottles of whiskey and all that kind of stuff. But Mrs. Collie's sister-in-law was walking in Corker on Easter Sunday morning, and they heard this band going in. This is a solid story. This is not a fake. But they heard this band going in, and with the Collie connection in Dublin Castle, anything could have happened. Could have been all bloody murder there, you know, nobody cared. They had 25 women working in this house, in laundry, milking, bringing, lighting fires upstairs, because, notice, these modern fires, you know. They had
gardeners, probably, and
gardeners, and they had all types of market gardening and all going. It was a veritable industry, that house was. It was the most important house in this whole area. The other houses had big people, maybe visitors, going in, eating and drinking, but these stuck, and they were marvellous. And Mrs. Colley, Edith Colley, was an extraordinary woman. And she, when the in 1920s, when the factory down here, or the mill, this place is full of mills, the paper mill actually closed up. She actually set up various workshops here for them and gave them meals and all that. She's an extraordinary woman. But they were never touched because the insurgents around knew them all.
Yeah.
And that they were, now, diversion. But anyway, she and Edith Colley, whose name was Finlay, the last of the Finlays, they heard this band drumming, and they came from parts from fields down there, 300 acres of land in it, and they came up all the way up to the house, only to find every man, woman, and child waiting outside their door. They were waiting for a band, and there was no bloody band anywhere. And they all heard it from all angles. There was now 300 acres of land, and all these people, the people now who had, they were working in market gardenings over there in the round garden, and the people down at Hay down there, you know, or whatever.
Are you telling me that there was a sound of a band heard on Easter Monday morning?
At the rising.
At the time of the rising.
That's right.
But there was no band.
There's no band. Now, that's a very solid. Now, these are not people now. These are who would be totally tired. They were very Irish in their own way. Like, they were very nice people.
But was there a band? Could there have been a band?
No. But they didn't find a band. This is the... They all went up. They were, Edith Colley said, they're going to burn the house.
Yeah.
They're going to kill God Almighty, he only knows if the thing. Because they had a hint already. Mrs. Colley's sister in law, who's the Colley, you know, her brother was.
Waiting for something to happen.
Was in the Dublin Castle.
Yeah.
So they had all the tricks, you know, and all the people, you know, who got the thing. They knew something was going to happen. But they,
but it's fascinating. Joe Devine, there's no doubt about it, but you're...
That's a true story. That's the most extraordinary story I ever heard.
Yeah.
I could tell you extraordinary things in my life.
Yes. Like what?
I don't go into this area at all. I've done actually studies of mysticism and all that. And I've been at more or less all the visions in Europe.
Yeah.
Including the Holy Land and all this.
So you believe you study this as well?
Oh, yeah. I do theology and all that. I have a lot of
mysticism,
studies.
Which is fascinating.
But their visions, yeah.
God, I'd love to come back and talk to you in relation to that.
I could talk to you all night, but I've articles written on them. Wrote them articles. Now they're coming to get this kind of thing in their heads now. The church crowd, you know, they're a strange kind of the church is wise in that it takes its time, but of course sometimes we don't have time today. You take all this happening now, all that has been told in La Salette. I've been in all those places, and the great one actually is 1949 with time diversion away, and a place called Fontenelle. In a place called Monte Chiari near the Great Lakes, near Turin, and they, Our Lady came actually to a nurse in a hospital there and told her all the things that were about to come, and not only they're about to come, that had already taken place, and they've all been proven now, a whole lot of them. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, life is, you're a very interesting man, and I find it fascinating talking to you. But Joe Devan, I have to leave you at this stage, but I'm coming back again to talk and to catch up on more of these stories.
I haven't started to tell yet, you see.
Talk to me about some of the other place names around here that would have a meaning. And
a lot of them changed. They changed, actually, because the land here went over to went into the possession of the Archbishop of Dublin, and that became Protestant Patrick's, remember?
Yeah.
And the other one, of course, now, you know, the church, the Christ Church on top of the hill, you know, the way in. They were actually, well, they were both Catholic churches, and they were changed over. And when the break came here after Henry VIII, of course, in the 1530s, they changed their own men, and some of them, you know, took the oath of abjuration, and the Bible, you know, the new Bible. And we ran into Queen Anne's time, you know, about 1703, 1714. It was written actually about her, actually the penal days, the real penal days, that she was drunk with the blood of priests. It's an awful thing, wasn't it? But all these, and you had this is rife through the island. You had priest hunters. You got so much for the head of a bishop and the head of a. The last.
Is this during the Reformation now?
Well, of course, that would have been the whole thing. It blew up from there, you know. But, you know, that was all Henry VIII. That was Henry VIII's thing, you know. Henry VIII actually was never a Protestant. He was a Catholic all the time. They thought he was. And people are, you know, and then you had the development in England where you had a whole lot of other religions.
But Joe, go back to the place names again. You know, you have Tala, for example. What does Tala, where are the origins of that name?
Tive is a plague, and Lacht is a flag. And it's the flag of the plague. The crowd that came here, they could have been Milesian, I don't know what they were. They came as a crowd, just as they're coming now into Ireland. And the plague came along, and they all died of plague. And that's the origin of it. Táib, Lacht, Lacht.
Is there any folklore about that then? You know,
loads of plague. There is, of course.
About but the what plague? Was it?
Oh, I don't know. It was a plague. A local plague. Could have been anything.
Yeah.
Could have been a bad flu or like any plague. There wouldn't been plague. Should the Black Plague of England. Yeah. You know.
And it wiped out all the...
Yeah, in 1660, yeah. And at the same time you had the Great Fire of London, you know, you've all yeah. the... And they got that because then you had a plague that was brought around by the Black Plague. There were fleas on rats, you know, and they got the blood of rats, fleas, and they onto humans after that, and then what plague.
But... living here since the 1960s, long before an M50 or the roundabout.
There's only one road, actually. Well, you had in Peter Duff's map, that was in 1703. He has actually coming in from Inchicore here, from the Naas Road. It's only one Naas Road there. It's a modern old place. And you had three, you had a road going into Clondalkin, you had another going out actually through Commonage, which became actually a part of Cork Park, or the wet place up here. It's the biggest estate, you know, Cork at all.
Yeah. And it was very swampy up there, was it?
It was. But actually, the River Swift, or the River Camac, came right down from the Dublin Mountains and came right down here. And when that overflowed, of course, the place was, and you got sedimentary set up and all that, and they came into the village and down. And then as the people came into the place, actually going back to that place,